What's up? It's December the 22nd, 2018, and I was just reading an article about the Chinese testing a sub-launched nuclear missile that can hit the United States from thousands of miles away. And, there's a lot of stories like this in the news these days. They're the kinds of stories you expect to see. I don't know, right about the time they start telling you that you have a new enemy and you have to go to war with this enemy in order for the world to be a better place, you have to nuke the enemy. I think people who've listened to my podcast know that I have mixed feelings about trade with China, but I don't really think that that's linked in any rational sense to whether or not we should go to war with China. I think that there are problems with the trade relationship, but I think that they were baked into the cake decades ago. And so disconnecting from this really dysfunctional trade relationship is not going to be easy. China's far too dependent upon the US consumer, economically speaking, for all the talk about, the Belt and Road Initiative and China replacing the US consumer with Russia and India. That's really nice thinking, but that's not realistic, at least not in the short term. And that's why a trade war with China could get kind of ugly and probably quickly, because there is this very dysfunctional, very unbalanced relationship. Now, could it have been different? Sure, maybe. But the stage of the game we're at now is kind of the. They've cleaned out all the gimmicks and they've taken advantage of all the schemes. And the military industrial complex scheme always pays off, in some sense. So yeah, the stage of the game we're at right now with China seems to be amping up the war fear. I don't know if China would act out of its own accord. I don't know that its government has any reason to do that as of right now. I was a little bit optimistic several months ago about the North Korea situation. I kind of bought into some of the, well, potentially naive rhetoric, but I bought into some of the crap that Trump was doing. No, I'm not really a political person, and no, I don't really believe that any of the parties want to solve anything. But yeah, it was cool that the rhetoric around North Korea was softening. It's not that I like the North Koreans. I don't like the government of North Korea. I don't know North Korean people in person. It's more of just that I don't know how a war is going to solve that problem. It could potentially kill a lot of people. And I don't know, maybe that does result in the government being toppled, but the amount of human carnage and damage is just, it's just not a rational trade-off. But North Korea, what they used to tell me when I was in the service and when I was stationed there is that North Korea will do what China wants it to do. And I gotta say, I thought maybe that wasn't true there for a while, but no, I think it's fundamentally true. I think that North Korea will go ahead and do what China wants it to do. So, with respect to the North Korea situation, it doesn't surprise me that, Kim Jong-un and its government have come out and hardened their position on missiles again and on nukes again. It doesn't surprise me at all. So, if we have to contemplate If we have to think about the unimaginable, and that would be best case scenario, a limited regional war between the United States and China, or worst case and most likely scenario, a war that starts out regionally but becomes essentially World War III. One of the questions is what would actually trigger it? And I think this is where things get really unstable. And also work in the favor of peace, because I think the trigger is the good news. I don't think, as of right now, there is an obvious trigger. The closest thing you have, other than the South China Sea nonsense, and even there, one wonders what would happen in terms of escalation if something did happen. But the closest thing you have is Taiwan. And the status quo with Taiwan works in China's favor and works in our favor. So even if you know, China attacking Taiwan would trigger it, it doesn't look like right now the Chinese government has a reason to do that. You know, again, this is all based upon the crap you read in the news. So what do I really know? Some of the news stories around China make it seem like the economic situation there is turning soft quickly, that it's getting bad. But again, how do you evaluate that? You know, I've been told for years that the Chinese people have a lot of savings, they have a lot of gold. There's a lot of people in the alt media who pump up the Chinese economy. So it's hard to know how bad things are in China economically or how quickly they could get worse. And whether we like it or not, the Chinese government is a tyranny. It's a totalitarian government. Ours is not so great. Theirs is worse. But they have a pretty strong totalitarian government in the sense of the fact that it is solid, that it didn't go away when the Cold War evaporated. They're a long-lasting communist regime. And they rule China more or less with an iron fist. I mean, it's not an easy nation to rule that way, but they kind of successfully do it. But I would say they probably do so as long as the economic situation is fine, as long as they can make the compelling argument that people's lives are better off. And this is a lot like Mubarak in Egypt, just to take a slight tangent. But, you know, Mubarak, who lost power, I think it was in 2011 during the Asian Spring. What a fucking gimmick. What a psyop. Anyways, Mubarak was popular for many, many years. It doesn't mean he was less brutal. He was brutal as hell in Egypt. He was terrible. All of his brutality existed from beginning to end. But the difference is that professors and doctors and lawyers were not cleaning toilets and driving taxis when Mubarak took power. That there was this political class that maintained stability, and as long as they were happy economically speaking, things were fine. It was when they basically, when their economic situation imploded, that they weren't so happy. And frankly, this applies to the French Revolution as well. The revolutionary class in France prior to the revolution really wasn't the peasantry. I mean, it's not that they weren't beaten down, but they more or less didn't have great expectations to begin with. It was the middle class, or the emergent middle class, in France in 1789 that went haywire for the simple fact that they had expectations, whether their expectations are realistic or not. They had expectations about reality. They had expectations about outcomes, about their own standard of living. And when things turned south, they got crazy. Well, this could be applied, and this is more or less the Davies hypothesis, you know, from the 1962 paper Toward a Theory of Revolution. And I tend to agree with it. But, you know, according to this theory, people more or less, you know, in societies that are very poor or situations where you expect poverty, people are more or less stable. They don't revolt because their expectations aren't challenged. In relatively well-off situations, the same applies if the situation doesn't change drastically. You know, people are more or less willing to go along with things. But it's when you have rapid shifts in standard of living, you know, especially over the course of a generation or two, where the society itself can be very unstable. And what you have in China since Deng, or at least, since the 70s, since China began opening up, is you have a period of tremendous economic growth. You have the tiger economy. You have the year-on-year of that 6 or 7 or 8 or 9 or even better percent GDP growth. So it's hard to know what happens if there's a major setback. If all of this reverses itself and you start, I don't think we would see it. I think that they would control the media to the point we wouldn't know it necessarily. But if you did begin to see massive unemployment in China, then the government of China would be in a difficult situation. And I think this does change the equation. Well, I would say, if you want to ask the question, what would trigger China to act in some crazy way, which means to trigger a war with the United States, which would just be it would be plain crazy. America is not nearly stable enough politically to respond well to such an event, which means the likelihood that we would be cautious and we would, you know, govern our response, the most likely outcome, given the general zeitgeist of the United States right now, is we would probably launch a major counterattack. If we were attacked with nukes, we would likely launch a major counterattack with nukes. So it would get bad quickly, but it would be worse for China, just because they really haven't caught up yet in the great nuclear game. And frankly speaking, a lot of the Chinese population is pretty well concentrated. So yeah, in the great nuclear game, people think China has an edge. In truth, China doesn't really have an edge. No one really does. It would be horrible for all sides. But I don't really want to talk about that quite yet. So the trigger for China could potentially be, and I say trigger for the Chinese government, could potentially be a way to deal with or ameliorate internal domestic instability. You know, people up in arms, people going crazy, people demanding change. And unlike 1989, where there was still a lot of room to grow and a lot of potential for, you know, for that economic wave to lift all boats, there wouldn't be a lot to bribe their people with. So if you can't bribe your people too much, your other option is basically to convince them of this other enemy. And the great thing about it is it's not that difficult to convince them. Like, it really isn't that difficult to draw a relationship. Trump has a trade war, our economy tanks, you know, the United States is evil. That sounds overly simplistic, but that'll generally be the level of complexity of the propaganda. And the same applies with the United States. If we go through some period of economic difficulty, I'm sure they'll spin it into some sort of, well, holy crap, China. So I do think, even though there aren't any immediate flashpoint triggers between the United States and China that realistically would trigger something like a regional war to break out, I do think the economic situation, as always, could cause enough instability to lead to that. So here's the next question, and I kind of covered this in a previous podcast, but this is going to be specific to China, because there are other ways World War III could happen. We can just get that out of the way. It could happen in the Ukraine. There's a flashpoint there. There's still a flashpoint in the Middle East, even though it looks like Trump's pulling troops home from Syria. We still have troops there. So there's more than one place, but it's basically between the Middle East, Persian Gulf, the Ukraine, and I would say Asia, if you're asking yourself, where could World War III happen? Those are the most likely locations. Everything else would be some type of a terrorist attack. You know what I'm saying? And yeah, it's not great and it sucks. Or some type of social insurrection. Like what's going on in France right now, yes, it could get worse, but that's not really going to trigger World War III. The worst case there is you get basically the French government falls. Maybe you get a lot of social instability for a while, who knows, but not likely to cause World War III. But then again, who knows? I mean, we are in a very strange time of instability. So yes, there's more than one flashpoint, but if I were wagering in a logical way, I would say there are three primary flashpoints for a world war right now. One of them would be in the Middle East, Persian Gulf, places like Syria, Iran, obviously. The situation between Israel and Iran has never been resolved. But Trump has kind of done some things, it looks like, to sort of take the foot off the accelerator. So who knows? Maybe the Middle East, Persian Gulf area won't be a likely flashpoint for a major war. And the other place is obviously the Ukraine, because of these contested Russian republics in the east of the Ukraine. And a lot of this is based upon what Khrushchev did, I think it was back in the 50s, and giving significant portions of Russia to the Ukraine. Honestly, the whole thing's a mess. This thing around Crimea is bullshit. Crimea is very Russian. The idea that Crimea is more Ukrainian than Russian doesn't make a lot of sense if you understand the history. But the fact is, Sevastopol and Crimea, this is, you know, critical to sort of the Russian national security. So it doesn't make a lot of sense for us to make a big deal out of it. It's destabilizing. So yeah, it's a flashpoint. It doesn't immediately look like anything's going to happen. And that would apply to China as well. It doesn't currently look like there is an immediate place where something's going to happen. So when I say flashpoint, maybe I should say, maybe a better term wouldn't be flashpoint, but there are three regions of general instability that could get worse. So I'm just talking about China right now. So let's say, for the sake of argument, that the United States or China miscalculates during a period of political instability, because I think that's the most likely thing that would cause escalation. You would have political instability in China or the United States, or God forbid both, and you have some sort of miscalculation. A pilot goes off course, a Chinese, you know, missile ship fires a missile, one of these islands accidentally lights up on some American spy plane. And so if you had those two things, political instability on one or both sides, and again, I'd say that the likely cause of instability, again, is going to be economic, but whatever the cause, let's say you have political instability on one or both sides, and you have a miscalculation, or an outright error, or even an attempt at a false flag, because I don't frankly trust the system, you know, quote unquote, sarcastic quotes. I don't really trust the system. I don't really expect it to behave well. So the idea that there could be a false flag is not impossible. And so if you don't know what a false flag is, that's kind of like the Gulf of Tonkin for Vietnam, or, you know, remember the Maine, the battleship Maine, in Cuba back in, you know, what was it, 1898 or 99. These are events that are contrived. They're made up, they're make-believe in order to get people to do something, to go to war, for example. So yeah, it could be that. But in my view, for it to get ugly quickly, it really would have to be a combination of some event, either contrived or not contrived, and you'd have to have a level of political instability, because I think if the cooler heads are in charge in this situation, it doesn't seem likely that either side would choose conflict. It's not going to help out the situation economically. Unless, of course, you think in terms of, well, after some horrible disaster, you have growth. I mean, there is that horrible feature to American capitalism now. It's dark and it's very, very dangerous and gross. But this idea that disaster or calamity can equal economic growth, it's a very gross, demonic way of looking at things. You know, it's what Bastiat talked about in terms of the broken window. You know, this idea that somehow the broken window is a good thing, and it's like, no. But, yeah, so you have this event. And I think if I were to pick an area, I don't know if the South China Sea necessarily would be it. I think almost North Korea comes into light again. Because, again, the relationship between China and North Korea is a little bit opaque. But I believe it's real, it's solid. And so it could be that the events around North Korea, it could be a scenario where something to do with North Korea, either a conflict that starts there and spills over to China, or frankly just a situation where we start a conflict, or the North Koreans do, either side could, and the Chinese say, well, we're backing the North Korean plan for peace, and you know, we're giving America blah, blah, blah hours to do this and that. You know, you never know. This, you would need political madness for this to happen. Now, as far as conventional war goes, I don't even conceivably see how any rational military professional would propose invading any Chinese territory. This would be insane. There's really no reason to believe that could lead to victory, and so there is no strategy by which the United States could take over China. The only strategy the United States could hope for would be to completely contain China militarily. And so that would involve war against infrastructure. That would involve sowing a lot of chaos, potentially you know, best case scenario, if you assume a scenario where the United States kind of decapitates the Chinese government relatively quickly, which would be a really lucky scenario for the United States, and somehow isolates nuclear control, because that's what you'd have to do. You would have to basically take out their leadership capabilities, and you would have to isolate nuclear control. Once you've done that, if you've removed the nuclear threat, then the rest of it is just containment, chastisement, you know, probably attacks to make a point. But for the most part, you just need to achieve military control, and then you need to force a situation. If I'm to believe the propaganda, and I haven't been in the military a long time, so I don't really know if the propaganda is true, but if I'm to believe the propaganda, we have some pretty cool weapons. We probably have some secret weapons that the United States theoretically maybe could pull off such a scenario. I don't really believe the propaganda. I don't think that's the case. I think there's probably more of the Keystone Cops thing going on now than anything else. So the most likely scenario would be sloppy conventional escalation, which means something more like Task Force Smith. You know, in July of 1950, I think it was, they sent about 150 plus or minus maybe 300 U.S. Army soldiers with very light infantry equipment to stop a division or two of North Koreans armed with submachine guns and T-34s. And yeah, Task Force Smith didn't turn out so good. It did not stop the North Koreans. It really wasn't even much of a speed bump. But that's the kind of sloppy escalation I could see happening, is a Task Force Smith or something being sent someplace, and they get wiped out, so Americans get upset, and basically it could be one conventional debacle after another on both sides. Like, essentially, I wouldn't expect it to be one-sided. You know, this is asymmetric in different ways, but I wouldn't expect it to be everything goes to the Chinese side or the American side. I would expect it to be a relatively sloppy process. And after a week or two, maybe a month, honestly, I think people are way overestimating how this kind of war would unfold in terms of its scope. Like, I do think it would get horrible fast, but I don't think we have the military industrial infrastructure to mass produce these high-tech weapons. We have high-tech weapons, but they're not really mass production weapons. You have to really look at the numbers involved to realize this. So you only lose so many of these, and you basically lost a lot. Like, how many stealth bombers do you lose before you've lost a significant percentage of your stealth bombers? I don't think it's more than 3 or 4 or 5. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we have hundreds of these now, but I don't think we do. And if we have a few hundred of them, I'd be surprised. But whatever, let's say we have 100 stealth bombers. Let's say we have 1,000 fighters. These numbers get bad quickly depending upon the nature of the engagement. And a lot of the technology that the Chinese are using and the Russians have been using have been leveraging these sort of directed and area-wide energy weapons, microwave weapons, conventional EMP, directed radio, directed high frequency. The fact is, we don't know for certain what kinds of battlefield energy weapons our fighters and our tanks and our bombers will face. So if I were to make a guess, and a situation between China and the U.S. got out of control, I would imagine a sloppy escalation scenario. And probably for the first week or two, it would be like watching, hey, let's turn on the news and see what, you know, what we blew up in China this, you know, today, and what the Chinese attacked. It could end up being like that, if not for a week, a few days. I think things would probably get scary and serious after a week, but even then, I still think it would still be the tit for tat. I don't know if it lasts more than a week or two, because it's not a question of ultimately could either side win or lose. It's a question of when they get to the point where they feel like it makes sense to use nuclear weapons. This is the thing about all of this war, is that there's going to come a point where one side will realize, no, I mean, because I just don't honestly believe America would go along with some massive mobilization for war with China. I don't think that society would go along with some massive, bring back the draft. mass conscription. So in my view, if there were a war like this, it would be like a phrase I heard once when they were talking about the Cold War. It would be a come as you are war. Whatever fighters you have, whatever trained soldiers you have, for the most part, they would represent that 80 to 90% of what you were going to have for the whole war, because the war wasn't going to last much longer than a certain point. And so that was generally kind of a feeling about the Cold War, is that if the United States and the Soviet Union went to a war, yeah, there could be a lot of cool, high-tech, conventional back and forth, but sooner rather than later, and probably within weeks, if not days, things would escalate to the first battlefield nuclear weapon. And here's the other thing too. Let's assume the best case scenario. And that is, or I should say, let's assume the best case scenario for the United States deep state. And that is, because of their technology, because they're still an edge, they rapidly gain dominance. They isolate most of the nukes, or at least they try to. Let's not go there. But they rapidly gain dominance, but they don't isolate all the nukes. So you have some Chinese stray nukes. The question is, how many of those nukes do the Chinese need to use to put our situation, conventionally speaking, backwards? That's the thing. I'm not talking about EMP. I'm just talking about the fact that if you hit a few places in the Pacific or in the United States with nukes, you're going to create massive problems. And like leaving wounded on the battlefield, it would be a major setback. So that's the thing. If we did happen to gain massive dominance in a war with China, but not rapid enough, where we gain control of their nuclear control, which means getting control of nuclear sites with special forces, it basically means isolating their nuclear infrastructure, which, frankly, I have no idea how you'd pull that off. That would be Guns of Navarone times a billion if we had a special forces plan for isolating nuclear control in the case of war with China. That would be pretty impressive. But you would have to have something like that. And you would have to do that very quickly. Now, the likelihood that you could do that so well that the Chinese wouldn't slip at least one nuke out somehow and do damage, I think, is virtually zero. But I suppose you could make the argument that you could pull this off without losing more than one or two American cities. And that's about the best I would say. But barring something really super efficient elite, which I just don't think is likely, what's more likely is tit for tat, slow at first, and then building up tempo until one or the other side basically runs out of most of its useful weapons. And then it's a question of, can I go to the taxpayer, or do I just say, listen, you go any further and I'm using nukes? I don't even know if it would go that long. Like, I kind of think that there's enough of a philosophy in the Department of Defense now, based upon, again, the crap they tell us, the crap that gets leaked, who the fuck knows what they really believe. But if I'm to believe the stuff that comes out of, like, Foreign Affairs and other journals and whatnot on the current thinking and United States strategic whatever, there's a lot of people who believe that we can fight limited nuclear wars. And so I would be inclined to say, yeah, maybe after about 4 or 5 days, you would probably have some jackass in the Pentagon say, listen, if we use nukes here, here, and here, and it would be like a surgeon talking about increasing a woman's breast size. If we use nukes here, here, and here, it'll just all be over and it'll be fine. And I've said this before in other podcasts, and I'll say it again. Nuclear weapons are incredibly damaging to the very technologies that would be required to turn off nuclear war. I know that's a little bit convoluted, but you have to think about it for a second. Nuclear weapons are more than just EMP. You're talking about residual radiation, which also interferes with electronics. You're talking about real damage to infrastructure, massive damage. You're talking about lots of wounded people, and frankly, a level of trauma that the United States has not seen since the American Civil War. A level of domestic trauma on that scale if there were nukes that went off in this country. So if people are going to ask themselves, what's the damage? The damage is immeasurably bad. And it only gets worse. So the problem with this argument about limited nuclear war, and this, and both sides will believe this. Like the Chinese side, some Chinese general will go and say, "Listen, Chang, I've got this new hypersonic super death ray nuke that can totally evade all that bullshit American anti-ballistic missile crapola. And I'll, you know, if I push this button, we win the war." So there are these people on both sides. These people are everywhere. These warmonger, you know, puzzle palace scumbags are on both sides. But on the American side, it will be like, listen, we can fight the tit for tat. We're not doing that well. Even if we're lucky enough to gain the upper hand, it'll take years to do A, B, and C. And that's the thing you need to understand, or we should get out of the way, with respect to China. No one, no rational military person. I mean, I think there are some insane people who've read potentially von Manstein and you know, Panzer Leader by Heinz Guderian, and I've gotten the wrong impression about going to war with Russia. You know, maybe they've read Hitler's Panzer East by Stolfi. But my point is, there might be some crazy generals in the Pentagon who think or believe we could win a war with Russia. And it would all be over by, you know, before the leaves fall or whatever. I cannot believe there's any rational person in the Pentagon that believes we could invade China and take over any portion of it in any effective way without suffering major casualties and without it being a tremendous cost. You know, yes, if China were undergoing civil war like the 1920s, maybe we could have gunboats floating up and down the rivers, okay? But that is not taking territory, okay? At best, that's being the kindergarten kid taking pot shots with a BB gun. That is not invading and holding territory. So if you don't intend to invade China, then the best you can hope for if you go to war with China is to isolate China, right? That means closing down the airspace, which is, again, doable. If you can control the airspace, you can shut it down. You can put a radar net over it. You can make it impossible for them to do anything unless it's in tiny puddle jumpers and helicopters hugging the valleys. And even then, you can make that difficult as well. So you can shut down the airspace up to a point. It does become an issue of attrition if they have air defense capabilities. And again, you know, that's a whole other issue, is what air defense capabilities would they be able to maintain? And for how long? Like, how long could they maintain if we're knocking out factories? Because people need to understand, these weapons, these modern weapons, are very difficult to manufacture. All the 3D printing hoopla aside, we are still in a period of warfare where building an anti-aircraft missile or even an effective anti-aircraft cannon requires infrastructure. It requires resources. It requires electricity. It requires machinists. It requires technology. And the types of warfare that are practiced, even just on the conventional level, these days, target technology, target electricity, target infrastructure. And, you know, if we're talking about nuke war, then yeah, all bets are off. You might as well assume all the infrastructure in China gets taken down a notch or two. So even if the Chinese could maintain air defense, it's a question of how long could they do that. The United States could just use drones indiscriminately. That way there's no casualties. I mean, that's the thing. You couldn't invade China, but you could, in fact, isolate China in such a way that you'd force them to the table. And then it's just a question of what you want to bargain for, what they want to bargain for. How do you settle the peace? That would be an ideal scenario for the American deep state, to achieve some sort of conventional air dominance over China, forcing China to the table, getting some type of crappy deep state deal, and then moving on. It could happen. I mean, that could happen. I don't think it's a likely scenario because it's really too rosy to be realistic. It's as likely as not that any type of war that China would be involved in would tip its society into massive chaos. And it's entirely possible that China could be two or three countries in the years following any type of war like that. So it might not be negotiate with one person. You might be talking about warlords. If you push, if you put China in a situation of internal chaos, it's hard to know what would happen. I think the Chinese communist government probably falls. And if it does fall, who takes over? Well, pick a general. Pick someone in charge of a region. I have no idea. But it's plausible that you're talking about a situation where you're not negotiating with one person, you're negotiating with two or three or a dozen different generals to end a war. And that's and in truth, that's really the best case scenario from the American perspective. The most likely scenario, in my opinion, because of the nature of nuclear war and the nature of what you have to do, there, nuclear weapons are very much use it or lose it. I mean, yeah, the Russians have a dead man switch, and but even that basically is the exception that proves the rule. If you want to have nukes, you're either going to use them as quickly as you can or set up a means by which they'll simply be used one way or the other. That's a dead man switch. So the bottom line is nukes, in a nuke war, nukes must be used. If you're not using your nukes, why aren't you? It's horrible, but it's the math of the game. And when you consider that there's some probability that some percentage of nukes won't even function correctly because, hey, humans are not perfect, then yeah, there's an incentive to just escalate and use them. And I think it gets out of control very quickly. Like I said, if you think about all the bits and pieces that go into making modern life work, how many of those things do you have to destroy before everything kind of grinds to a halt? How many? For example, I worked near the terminal in Seattle for a while for a company that made software related to terminals. So I would be next to these giant cranes that lift, containers off of ships. And it stood, I thought about this one day, but how many of those are there? How many of those giant cranes are there on the entire west coast of the country? And there's probably not, a giant crane store where, hey, man, I just lost my giant crane. Can you come down and just set one up for me? So the reality is, you wouldn't have to destroy too many of these giant cranes before basically all this container trade grinds to a virtual halt, or at least gets slowed down significantly. And that's not even a really good example. But that's the thing, is people don't realize a lot of these structures, they're not easily replaceable. Like, it took a lot of resources to get there. And once they're gone, they're gone. Bridges, highways, dams, power infrastructure. If it's gone, it's gone. So this is the brutal reality. All this China stuff, like China might have a hypersonic missile, China might have, rail guns, and China might be testing submarine launched nuclear missiles, and it's all really good to the Tom Clancy types who want to play pretend war in their brain. But the reality is, I think, is a couple possibilities. One is that this is just a big scam. That all of the war talk ultimately is bullshit. That at some level, and again, I know I sound like an Illuminati conspiracy person, but at some level, some joker or set of jokers is pulling the strings, and they want us to believe this, but this is just a way for us to live in fear. And I have to say, I am sympathetic to much of what I just said. I don't think it's exactly like that, but I think there's a lot of manipulation of this bullshit to keep people from thinking for themselves and breaking out of the, well, essentially the control grid of everyday life. Hey, the Chinese might blow you up with nukes, so you better be okay with being mistreated by the TSA at the airport. That's kind of how the logic works. We're going to treat you like shit, but at least, you're not getting nuked by China. But there's also the possibility that it isn't completely like that, or maybe even not even really like that. That, we have our own deep states, so do they, and it is a power game. And power games between bullies get out of control. This happened before World War I. World War I was a situation that was probably avoidable, except for the madness of governments that seemed hell-bent on having their way. I mean, ultimately, the war made no sense. except in terms of these really ridiculous, narrow-minded situations, these, you know, these these alliances, these agreements, these war plans that have to be, you know, you have to follow them to the letter. So, yeah, the paradigm of today, unlike 100 years ago, is that the United States cannot be stopped if it wants to fight somebody. At least that's what we get fed in America. And yeah, I do think a war with China would probably be conventional for a while. I don't even know, it's entirely possible that you would avoid ground force on ground force interactions, because I think it would go nuclear before that. Before you had actual Chinese infantry and American infantry trading bullets, with the exception of maybe Taiwan or Korea. But again, it's hard to know. I mean, if it was that situation, then yeah. But then it would be Koreans in Korea. And as far as Taiwan, that would be a small contingent, probably. Another Task Force Smith, so to speak. But it's possible that things would escalate so quickly that there would be no major engagements between ground troops. Because that's the thing. Once one nuke is fired, this is the. It's hard to express this or people to get it. Once you use one nuke, the stability of the situation decreases. And I don't think it's linear. And so two nukes makes it worse, but in a non-linear way, and then so on and so forth. So once nukes start flying, it's difficult to turn that off until basically both sides are obliterated, or at least so beaten down that they choose to figure out a way to stop. But I don't know. Do we even have a hotline with Beijing? We supposedly had a hotline during the Cold War with Moscow. You know, pick up the red line, the red phone. Do we even have anything like that? We probably do. We should. But it's one of those situations where once things get out of control, who's in charge? You know, do the people in charge today remain in charge if a nuclear war starts? You know, what happens? Do sane people take over and you know, argue for caution and restraint, or do crazy people seeking revenge take over? If it's Washington, D.C., I would wager crazy people, the crazier people take over, so the nuclear war continues. So, yeah, right now I don't think things are necessarily that bad. I think the economic situation is a bit of a question mark, too. It's not that I think it's stable. It's just that it's such a racket. The whole thing is so corrupt and so opaque that I have no way of knowing if some of this economic news is real or if it's just more of the slow burn, more of the slow, you know, d descent into hell. I have no way of knowing one way or the other. But anyways, let's hope there isn't a nuclear war with China for Christmas this year.